and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. Milwaukee police shot two teens accused in a suspected carjacking. Chief Jeffrey Miller.
The suspect vehicle was determined to be a stolen auto, and a firearm was recovered from the vehicle.
The pursuit led down an interstate. At one point, a driver reversed, hitting a squad car. Miller says that's when officers fired, hitting two of the six suspects inside. The FAA wants to know why a Southwest Airlines flight dropped to just 525 feet as it made its approach into Oklahoma City's Will Rogers Airport.
The real danger here was that the crew didn't seem to understand that they had blown through this assigned altitude and they were getting so close to the ground.
ABC News aviation contributor Steve Ganyard. What was Tropical Storm Alberto has quickly weakened after making landfall early today along Mexico's northern Gulf Coast. At least four people are dead. South Korea says it would consider sending arms to Ukraine. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The state law library will be renamed for Lavinia Goodell, the first woman lawyer in Wisconsin. Goodell moved to Wisconsin in 1871 and drafted a bill to guarantee women the ability to practice law in Wisconsin, which became law in 1877. The law library was named for former conservative Justice David Prosser. Turning waste from factory farms into fuel may not be the green energy boon its supporters say it is. Chris Hunt is a researcher for the Socially Responsible Agriculture Project. He says biogas doesn't solve the problem.
If we put money toward biogas, we're essentially helping to subsidize and further entrench industrial livestock production.
Biogas supporters say anaerobic digesters can be responsibly regulated. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
100 days, 144,000 minutes. The countdown to the November presidential election is on, and Maggie Dawn is counting too as she continues her special segment, Biden's Top 100.
Having heard from each and every one of you, I should start talking about what President Biden is proposing us for his second term.
Biden's Top 100 continues. You're invited to be part of it too. Call or text the Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays starting at 2, across the Civic Media Radio Network and the app.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. The assault on public education continues. The push towards Sharia law, Christian Sharia law, is in full swing. I look at Louisiana on Wednesday. The Republican governor of Louisiana, Jeff Landry, he signed into a law that would mandate that every public school classroom in the state of Louisiana would have a poster-sized display of the Ten Commandments in a large, easily readable font. Every public school classroom from kindergarten all the way through state-funded university. So in every classroom, we're going to put the ten things there. Now, what's interesting is you've got, you know, the leader of their party who sees that list of 10 things not as thou shall not, but as thou shall. It's more of a checklist for him than it is the rules not to. And every time I get into this discussion about the 10 commandments, which I got to tell you, I'm not horribly opposed to, you know, teaching them on a certain level, you know, in the home, as we've done with our children, because I think, you know, not killing, not stealing, you know, not cheating, not, you know, not lying, you know, not coveting, you know, your neighbor's stuff, or their significant others, you know, honoring their father and mother, good kind of stuff, maybe don't use the Lord's name in vain every other sentence. Maybe the idolatry thing. Maybe don't worship money or bad things. Some of it has some good stuff to it. What I find interesting, and what I've thought all the years that this has been going on, is kind of the conversation I had with a guy years ago. His name was Pastor James David Manning. And Pastor James David came on the program and was, at the time, talking about President Obama and him being a homosexual. In fact, called the president the long-legged Mac Daddy. That was his big thing. And it's not provably true, but it was one of those things where you go, bearing false witness is one of those 10 rules. So I asked him, I said, good pastor, can you tell me those 10 commandment things? Because I'm assuming, because this was the time when Roy Moore was still in the Alabama Supreme Court, and he was being ousted for the big monument that they put and all of that stuff. And I said, I assume you support Roy Moore and the 10 commandment monument and all that stuff and plastering it everywhere. And he's like, absolutely. And I said, I have a theory. And that theory kind of goes like this. The people who want it plastered everywhere don't know them. So can you tell me, in your own words, in no particular order, what are the 10 commandments? And we went through this for about 3 or 4 minutes of him telling me that he's got the good book right here and I'll read them to you. I'm going, no, that's not what I want. I don't want you to read them to me. I want you to tell me them. I want you to articulate what those 10 rules are, what those 10 things we shouldn't do are, and in a way that you feel comfortable and that we understand, because they seem pretty simple. The first three are pretty simple. It's the God stuff. Don't use the name in vain. Don't worship false gods. Keep holy the Sabbath. No, that should be pretty simple, right? And then, the kill, the steal, the honor, the covets, all that stuff, kind of the adultery, all that stuff kind of, right there. Simple. It could have been a sentence or maybe two. And he hell-bent on, no, I'll read them to you. And I go, no, I don't want them read. And never did tell me what they were. So it's my view, and it's always been my view, that the people who want this stuff plastered all over the place are people who don't know them and need to have them either as a constant reminder of what not to do and how to be a decent person, because clearly they're incapable of doing that on their own, or they view it as a checklist of, well, I didn't kill anyone today. There's a task for the day. And I know I'm kind of making light of this, but this is not the biggest issue facing our public schools, especially in Louisiana, where I didn't even know they had a public school system. I thought they destroyed that years ago. In fact, I've had friends who've lived in New Orleans, and all of them went to private schools because the public schools were so horribly underfunded that only the poor, the poorest of the poor, end up going to the public schools. And this is, for me, it's the cautionary tale of where we're heading as Republicans keep doing what they're doing to education funding, to school choice. Understand, when a conservative talks about school choice, what they're really saying is they don't want the others around. They don't want poor people around. They don't want people who don't have the right complexion around. They don't want people who don't have the right, gender identity around. Don't want any of those people. We want blinders, straight, this, nothing else. And they'll destroy everything else. And what they want is they want funding for their children. And, well, not for yours, especially if you don't fit into the right category. And look, as a straight white guy, I could potentially live in that world because, I seem to be, in that blinders world. But that's not who we are as a country. And it shouldn't be who we aspire to be either. But understand, this attack on public education, not new. Uncle Milty and the The folks back in the 50s started this when the Brown versus Board of Education happened. Reagan in 1980, the sainted Ronald Reagan promised to end the Department of Education. This is not new. So when you have Betsy DeVos, who, you know, who comes around and says, well, we want school choice, and literally can't tell you anything about education, and Trump makes her the Secretary of Education, kind of a problem there, don't you think? So when I see this, I see Louisiana going, we're going to do this silly thing in a school system that is badly broken and should be the cautionary tale for the country. If you push into all of these segregated kind of ideological, religious, or you know, just it's, we feel like this, if you slice and dice the education system up, what you have are divided communities. You have another segregated system. And then the public schools simply become the place where there's nowhere for them to go because they don't fit into any of the categories, or they're just poor. Now, this is where it affects me, because I was just poor. In this system, conceivably, could have ended up being warehoused. And I don't think that's what we want. I don't think that's what people want as a society for their local schools. You know, maybe those people in Louisiana, that's fine. But what if that came to your backyard? I mean, you know, everybody I talk to from New Orleans tells me the school system's a mess. And that's by design. This is what they've done on purpose. Because after Hurricane Katrina, what did the Bush folks do? What did the moneyed interest push for? Yeah, vouchers, school, this privatization, all of that. They were happy to finish off the public education system. Now, I look at Florida, another one of the states working their foolhardy best to destroy public education. Evidently, their governor, Ron DeSantis, just vetoed all of the money that would go to any arts program or any cultural program for any of the schools in the state. So, you know, I was no good at art, but I liked it. It was an interesting class. I learned a lot. I learned who some of the great artists were and some of the, you know, that stuff. And I think it's important in order to be a well-rounded human being to have some of this stuff, to understand other cultures, to participate with some of that stuff. But that's not what the ideologues on the right want. That's not what the billionaire class wants. That's not what these folks are in for. One, the moneyed interest. They just want to drain the system so they can put more money in their pocket. And doing a pretty good job of that. Education Incorporated, doing a heck of a job. Ensuring that your kids don't get the opportunities that they should be getting. And why? Well, more for them. And ultimately, when I think about this stuff, you know, it's for me, it's all about creating a controllable citizenry. It's all about going after people who, well, don't think critically. I mean, what our wealthy class doesn't want is, and George Carlin did a great bit on this back in the 90s. What they don't want is a well-educated populace capable of critical thinking. They want people just smart enough to do the jobs, move the papers, move the boxes, do whatever, be functional to make them more money, to line their pockets even more, but not smart enough to question why. And if they do question why, not smart enough to be able to bridge the gaps that are thrown at them, the divides that are thrown in their way, the slicing and dicing that pit us against each other, not able to cross those barriers so that working people might realize that they have power in numbers, that if they were to stand in solidarity, we wouldn't have an economy that creates the largest billionaire class in the history of humanity, that we would actually share that throughout the entire economy, that it would actually trickle down. Can't have that. We have to believe what we're told, and we now live in the world of alternative facts. Thank you, Donald Trump. Thank you, Republican Party. This idea that, and I see all these videos all over social media saying, you know, Joe Biden and all these authoritarians on the left, they want to control the world. They're They're fascists. They're taking over. And you go, well, wait a second. This, again, is another one of those things. Like my mother always said, if someone's accusing you of doing something and you really didn't do it, chances are they did. And this is that kind of scenario. She says, if someone points their finger at you, they got three pointing back. This is one of those. Because I hear a lot on the right going, they're destroying institutions and they're creating divisions and they're normalizing the worst behavior and they're doing all these things because they want to control you. When the reality is, have you looked at a Trump rally lately? It's like a history rewrite. It's like 1984. It's like Winston Smith, whose job was to rewrite history every day. During Trump's rally in Racine on Tuesday, there were a bunch of things, and CNN did a pretty good job of going through the speech and picking out some of the things. For instance, Trump claimed that during his tenure, the world was at peace. I don't know what world he was talking about. There were numerous conflicts around the globe, some we were involved in. Claimed again, again and again, that the 2020 election was rigged, even though not there. Claimed that votes tend to disappear after they're cast. You vote and they just go away. No, that hasn't happened. And they've not been able to prove that. But it's the belief. I believe this to happen. He's now, saying that, the country's in the middle of the worst crime wave in modern history. Crime declined sharply in 2023 and the first quarter of 2024. It's actually going down. But it's like a lot of this stuff. The economy's horrible. It's the worst thing. It's the worst. We're almost in a depression with the lowest unemployment rate we've had in decades. You can go through all of these claims. Nancy Pelosi, turned down his offer for 10,000 soldiers. There's no evidence of that whatsoever. This is a guy who just reaches around and pops something out of the dark side of the moon, and it is now their fact. One of my favorite ones was that no president had ever had tariffs on China before him. He was the first ever. And understand, we've had tariffs on China since like the 1700s. Not new, but it's this, he said it, so it must be true. He said it, he's our guy, so it must be true. And this is the weird place that we're in, because, when our media does fact check things, rarely, it doesn't get the attention that the first comment got. For instance, we've been talking about Trump's claim that we're going to do away with taxing tips. What did he do during his 4 years? What he did during the 4 years is he actually wanted to make it easier for employers to pool those tips, take them from the wait staff, take them from the people who you think you're giving these tips to, and pay the back of the house, pay other workers, or line their pockets. That's what he wanted to do with tips. Now he's saying we're going to do away with the tax structure, and with no plan on how to do this whatsoever. So the question comes back to, when do we start taking Trump at his word and understand what his word is, well, BS? And when do folks on the right go, this isn't right? Look, there are Republicans out there, I'm sure there are, who would be a lot better for this country. Donald Trump is not. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Got a lot to get to, a lot to talk about. Anything he said that caught your attention? I mean, if the shark's an electrocution, I'd rather be electrocuted than eaten by a shark. Okay. Okay. Wow. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Tuesday, the U.S. Department of the Treasury and the Internal Revenue Service, they published their final rules on the Inflation Reduction Act's prevailing wage and registered apprenticeship requirements. This good stuff. This is the meat and potatoes. For the working class. This is how we transition. This is how we ensure that that transition that is not just good for society, not just good for the planet, not just good for the future, but good for the now, good for the workers who are going to be getting these jobs as our manufacturing economy evolves into a cleaner, greener machine. You hear the comment, and I'm not so thrilled with how they frame it, a just transition. I don't know. I don't know a better term. How about, you know, the first time in humanity that workers don't take it on the chin? How about the first time in humanity that you know, a transition actually benefits everyone? How about we make sure that, you know, the people who are losing the current jobs that will evolve into the next generation of jobs? How about there is a, I guess, just transition is about right. To ensure that they don't end up losing their livelihoods, end up losing their standard of living, and communities don't get hammered. You know, a couple of years ago, we did a tour and we went to a bunch of places that manufacturing had been their bedrock. It had been what held it was the glue that held the community together. It's what gave them an identity. And those jobs, you know, brought income into the community, a stable stream of good paying jobs, people with disposable income who'd spend that money on Main Street, and people wanted to start businesses in that area because people had disposable. It was a workable system. When you have workers who earn good wages, who have stable employment, who have security in that employment, and disposable income to go into the local economy, you have a thriving local economy. And this, you know, this was the story of the 50s, 60s, and part of the 70s. This was that story of working people working hard, playing by the rules, and getting ahead. Now you see, and we've seen this throughout history, whenever there's a transition, like we're going to cleaner manufacturing, cleaner energy, all of that stuff. There's the fear that the people who are doing those jobs now, they're going to be left behind, because history has shown us they do. And this is why I think what Biden has done is so incredibly important, and why this final rule by the Treasury and by the IRS, and again, you know, I guarantee you the Chamber of Commerce and everybody else are going to try and sue, because why would we want, you know, decent wages for working people? Why would we want good training programs for working people? Why would we want project labor agreement that you know, creates labor peace and stable employment and good benefits and wages? Why would we want that stuff? And I'm sure, like I said, I'm sure there will be lawsuits. But for me, this is the stuff we should be talking about. This is the policy that the Biden administration has moved forward on and demanded when they passed the Inflation Reduction Act. And I remember a couple Republicans kind of, you know, we should fight this. They didn't get it. They didn't get it taken out. And for those who don't know, project labor agreements are simple. simply says that everyone doing the job will agree to a set of terms. The wages, the benefits, the working conditions, all of that stuff will be agreed upon. Now, generally, they take the union's wage scale, benefit scale, and all that because it's easy. It's there. And it's a good scale. You get good workers to come in with that. And it benefits non-union firms as well because, look, you know, they can bid like anybody else. When you set the floor on wages, hours, conditions, everything else is about efficiency, who can produce the best widget, who can do the job best, who's the smartest. It becomes about something other than, hey, how can we cheat our workers? So for me, that has to be the bedrock of any building project we do. Ensure that the workers get the wages that they should be getting. And that's what part of the prevailing wage part is. And understand, prevailing wage isn't the union wage. It's the wage most reported. That's simple. If you go into an area and a guy running a backhoe is paid, you know, $40 an hour, you know, 5 out of the 10 times that they survey, that's what it's going to be. If you go to another community, it's 35. Same thing. It's the local prevailing wage. It's the wage most often paid. That helps raise up the wages of all of the people in the area. And it's good for the area. What we learned, and you know, there have been a number of studies on this over the years, what we learn is areas that have big prevailing wage projects, there is a massive, massive reverberation effect in the local economy. Because it makes sense if the workers have better wages, if they have disposable income, they spend it. And that's what we should be doing. Instead of going, here, rich people, have all the money. And you can share if you want, but you don't have to. We're not going to make you. And then you go and spend it, as opposed to going, here, we're going to take that money and we're going to divvy it out to all the people who work for a living. And they're going to spend it. That tends to work a lot better. And as I look at this, there's a lot of things in this final rule, you know, some things on bringing a production tax credits and then investment tax credits and, you know, advanced energy project credits. There's a lot of these things in there, efficient commercial building deductions. There's all this stuff in there to incentivize doing the right thing, doing the thing that, you know, we should be doing, you know, cleaning and greening our economy, using the next generation of technology. And look, here's the thing. I'm not 100% on the battery track. I think we're going to get to something beyond that down the road. Again, it's another one of these transitions to get us away from the dirty burning stuff and moving us in a direction that we start to really innovate. And when Americans throw their mind behind an idea, you know, I remember a guy who worked at NASA. I met him, you know, years ago when we took the kids to Disney. And we took a couple of train rides together. And he went through, you know, in great detail, all of the benefits that came out of NASA. Things you would have never thought of. All of the home products, all of the healthcare stuff, all of the, you know, you name it. The fabrics, the, you know, the microwaves, you know, all kinds of stuff. And he was just ticking it off one after another, you know, public investment went into building this project and achieving this aim. And all of these private industries sprung up because of that public investment. It was a huge driver of the economy. And I see electric batteries. I see the next generation of automobiles and all of that as that next driver. Now, what's interesting, this week, saw a story from Lordstown, Ohio. Everybody, I'm sure, remembers Lordstown, Ohio. There was a big GM plant there. In fact, it was the one that Donald Trump told all the GM workers, yeah, you don't need to move. Don't move because the plant's not closing. And then it closed. And you had those people who listened to him who got screwed because it laid empty. Well, a couple of years ago, I think a year and a half or so ago, this Ultimum Cells Corporation went in there. Well, workers just reached what they're saying is a historic agreement for a projected 1,600 workers who now are working in that plant after it closed during the Trump tenure. This is Biden creating jobs. These jobs are replacing the ones that were lost with good wages, good benefits, good working conditions, all of that stuff. We should be celebrating this. This is what should be on the news. This is how your life is getting better. And yet we don't hear that, do we? Not even a little bit. So for me, I look at this, I don't even know that it got reported, this final rule. But this is a big deal. This is how people's lives get better. And when I talk about smart policy, sound investment, this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Smart policy that gives people an opportunity to work hard, play by the rules, and get ahead. For me, this is the secret sauce right here. And the stuff we should be demanding more of. And when we go to the polls in November, it's one of those things that we should be remembering and then rewarding the person who put it into place with their vote and re-election. And who did this? Where's that stupid little finger-pointing thing? Because Biden did it. And that's reality. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly cloudy skies and some showers and storms settling in during the overnight. Lower 60s and light east winds. On Friday, showers and storms around and some heavy rainfall a possibility. Afternoon highs will reach the lower to middle 70s. It's 63 at our studios.
Hey, Wisconsin, it's construction season, and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones. Check 511WI.gov or download the app for road work or closures on your route. Know before you go with 511 Wisconsin, sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, like I said, I think it's great that we are seeing prevailing wage put in there, with project labor agreements put into the spending that we're making on and moving towards a cleaner, greener economy. You look at the infrastructure bill. Same thing, ensuring that those jobs that are being created are good jobs, family-sustaining jobs, community-sustaining jobs. It's what we should be doing with our public investments. You know, this idea that, and look, it's been decades we've been doing this. We've been investing in things and then, you know, selling them off at fire sale prices to the private sector who were told run it better. And what do we end up getting? Every time we privatize a parking authority or a water authority or a turnpike or a prison, you name it, any of the things that we used to do for ourselves that we've now privatized and profitized, what you end up with is, you know, the hedge funds, the vulture capitalists, the shareholders lining their pockets, the services that we would get diminished. And ultimately, the infrastructure that we gave them, that we sold to them, being returned to us in tatters. And now we've got to go and reinvest in this. And there's got to be a better way of doing this, especially when you're talking about, you know, I have a lot of friends who their issue is climate change. They think that this is going to be horribly disruptive. We need to be doing everything we can possibly do to mitigate what is coming. Building levees and, you know, moving things and doing all kinds of stuff that need to be done. But also maybe trying to, you know, tap down on some of the horrible that's coming. Now, for me, I have my friends who, there's no such thing as, you know, climate change or, you know, it's just hot. It's just summer. I'll never forget the George Will. It's summer. Or what was it, James Imhoff from Oklahoma, you know, bringing a snowball. See, there's snowballs. There's no such thing as climate change. The reality is you want to look at where climate change is, look at the insurance markets. You know, there's just a story that came out of Florida That's Citizens Property Insurance. Their board approved a 14% increase. Now, they said, well, you know, they're still lower than everybody else. I was looking at the rates, and you go, okay, it could be lower than everyone else, but the rates are insane. If you live in Duval County, you could be paying, with this rate increase, and I understand, this citizens' property insurance supposedly is lower than everyone else. And they said in the article, like 30% lower. So I'm looking at the numbers. In Duval County, if they get this 14% increase, you could be paying over $4,000 a year for home insurance, to cover a single family home, to cover a condominium, to cover a mobile home, up from $3,500. In St. John's County, you could, again, over $4,000, up from $3,500. From Clay County, average premium would go up to $3,700 from $3,200. So you're seeing, just in 1 year, $500 a jump. Now, they're also getting rid of people. The article goes into how many policies they're dumping. And we saw a couple of months ago, we were talking about how many people of these insurance companies were leaving Florida because they're losing their behinds. And if we don't do something, on something of a, I don't know, a preventative level, we're going to see chaos. And look, we're already seeing the markets going crazy. We're already seeing disruptions. And what you're going to see is, you know, as these storms get stronger, you're going to see more damage, more losses, more property being you know, washed away. And insurance companies going, hey, we can't cover this. At some point down the road, we don't have the assets to cover the damage, which means eventually the people who are there are going to be left holding the bag. And what we're seeing now is we're seeing a lot of risk assessment and underwriting changes and all of this stuff going on, like, you know, 14% increase, which is causing some market volatility. People are skyrocketing their prices to the point, and this is where the scary part is, to the point to where you go, I don't have the money. I don't have the 4, 5, 10, whatever it's going to be to insure these properties. Don't have it. And what does that mean? That means when the next storm comes, that person has lost everything. And then we see GoFundMe. We see all of this stuff popping up. And, you know, trust me, as this stuff continues and as we look for other means, you're going to see, how did I read it the one time? Innovative insurance products. And when my mind hears innovative insurance products, my mind goes, that sounds like a gimmick to get your money and not pay for any claims. Heaven forbid you get one. Now, here's the thing. We know in a lot of these places, you know, the coasts of Florida, New Orleans, who I'm told, you know, by people who live there, they don't plan on being a city in 20 years because there's another Katrina potentially going to come anytime now. How would you like to live in a city where that's your reality? That at any minute, you know, one of these storms could come, you know, could develop and wash away. And have we done enough to be proactive? Have we done enough to help raise the levies and give ways of ensuring that you don't see the giant soup bowl that Katrina was back in 05? Have we done enough? And this is where I come back to. I think the Biden administration's trying. Would I have liked to have seen the infrastructure bill to be much bigger than $1.2 trillion? Absolutely. I would have liked to have seen it where the American Society of Civil Engineers put our need at, which at the time was about $4.8 trillion. So we're about a quarter of the way there, maybe? And every day things are getting worse. And I always think about Thomas Friedman. And I'm not a huge Thomas Friedman fan,
But he did have a really, really, really good quote. He said he went from Beijing to LAX, and it was like going from the Jetsons to the Flintstones. That's our reality, because we haven't invested for decades in the infrastructure that we need, not in the big, bold way that we need to. And this election should be talking about that. Look, the Biden accomplishment is we got something, a good start. And those jobs are going to help families afford to put food on the table, keep a roof over their head, invest in and spend in their local economies. We need more of that. You want to grow this economy from the bottom up. Give working people a shot. But how disruptive does it have to get? And I come back to the politics of this. Florida is, from what I'm told, a red state. There's some talk that potentially the voters of Florida have tired with Ron DeSantis and the shenanigans that are going on there. There are some who have told me potentially, possibly, it could be close. I'm not going to hold my breath because, after all, it is Florida. But when you see that the chaos merchants have no idea of what to do. They have no policy chops. There's nothing there. Look, Republicans have controlled the House for the last 2 years. What have they done? What have they brought to the floor? And look, I'm just talking about messaging bills. Just the, hey, we're going to stake a flag in the ground because these are our beliefs. This is our moral compass. Nothing that I've seen. So what makes us think that if you give Donald Trump a chance again in the White House, that he's not going to be worse than he was the first time, even though he's told us he's going to be, and that the Republicans have a vision for the future? I would argue where we are right now is the result of their past vision and what they still cling to today. This idea of an economy with the invisible hand controlling things, which means workers make less, have less health care, have less retirement, work in less safe conditions. Because, hey, we gotta get rid of those job-killing regulations. This is not hard. And again, I go back to this looking at Florida, and these insurance markets should be the canary in the coal mine. The fact that rates are through the roof. I know a couple of people who live in Florida. Their insurance rates are crazy compared to the rest of the country. But also, they use it more. So like any insurer, if you're costing them money, they're going to get it back. So I'm interested to see how this plays out. Because the ultimate down the road, what then happens, if the insurance markets, the private insurance markets, you know, collapse, because they keep you know, moving the goalpost. If that collapses, what then happens? There's going to be a call for government intervention. There's going to be a call, and this is the part that I really struggle with. Should I have to pay out of our tax dollars, out of my tax dollars? Should you have to pay out of your tax dollars to cover someone in Florida who, well, they didn't cover themselves because the premiums were crazy high. They knew that they were in an area that things were going to be horribly destructive. And the state did nothing to help them, nothing to insulate them from the risk, nothing to protect them, nothing to mitigate the risk, nothing. They left them out there knowing that the goodness of the heart of this country would be to come in and bail them out. Because the big companies, they've learned this. Corporate America has learned anytime there's a catastrophe, they are going to be fine. I'm worried about that working stiff who truly can't afford to pay the higher insurance premiums, who truly cannot get the insurance on their home that, you know, they've paid into for years. This is their dream. This is what they've worked their behinds off for. And then it can be wiped away and there be nothing. This is where I struggle, because I never want to see a working person get stiffed like that. And yet we've seen it. It's happened. So the question is, how do we stop it? For me, it's about having a proactive government, a government that does what we as individuals cannot do alone, but want to do collectively. That's what our government is about. It's what it should be about. It should be active, informed, engaged citizens saying, hey, we want to solve problems. Instead, all we get is chaos. All we get is people throwing mud at each other to get their couple of seconds on cable news or in the mainstream corporate-controlled media. Where are the solutions to solve our problems? Where are the solutions to pave our roads, fix our bridges, build better schools? Where is that America that pushed the bounds of possible? Where is that America that said, hey, we're going to build to the edge of technology and push that envelope even further? That we want a better future, not just for ourselves, but for our children and their children. What happened to that country? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1943. That was the day that would go down in the history books as the 1943 Detroit Race Riot. The violence started on Belle Isle, a large island park in the Detroit River. Both white and black Detroiters were visiting the park on that hot, sunny summer Sunday afternoon. The fighting broke out among a number of the white and black youth. Such interracial fighting over the use of parks and recreation space happened frequently throughout the urban North during the 1940s. Soon, false rumors spread about white and black attacks on women and children. Fueled by these rumors, anger grew among members of both communities. The fighting spread across the bridge into the city. The next day, federal troops were called in to restore the peace. Over 3 days of fighting, 34 people were killed. 25 were black, including 17 killed by police and federal troops. 9 were white. The next month, the NAACP produced a report called What Caused the Detroit Riot? An Analysis. They found that one of the biggest reasons for the sharp racial animosity was the influx of new black workers into the Detroit labor force. During World War II, Detroit's mighty car industry converted its factories to wartime production. As factory workers went off to fight, demand for labor soared. Southern labor, both black and white, were recruited to come north. Many white Detroiters did not want to work with the new African-American hires. From March to May of that year, there were 5 separate work stoppages by white laborers over black hiring or promotion. At the Packard Motor Company, nearly 27,000 workers walked off the job over the upgrade of black workers. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, another Trumpian moment, if you will. You remember earlier in the week, Trump said that Milwaukee was horrible, and he wasn't going to stay there during the convention. He was going to stay in Chicago while the Republicans had their convention in Milwaukee. And then he denied that he said it. I'm not going to stay in Chicago. No. And now. Claims he loves Milwaukee. In fact, repeatedly effusive with praise for Milwaukee because he always loved Milwaukee. None of the other stuff. No, always loved Milwaukee. And this is the kind of thing where you go, here's a guy again who would lie when the truth would be better. Because he thinks we're going to forget yesterday, and sadly, too many of us do. Our quote of the day from Senator Mitt Romney. And look, I'm not a huge Romney fan either, but I give him credit for at least standing on something, some moral. He said, quote, I draw a line and say when someone who has been actually found to have been sexually assaulting, that's something I just won't cross over in the person I want to have as president of the United States. So I'm guessing guessing he is not going to be supporting Donald Trump in the next election. Now, I do find it interesting because they're laying the groundwork already for when Trump loses to claim it was stolen. In fact, Steve Bannon was quoted saying that, you know, if they, you know, the Democrats steal this election, and they fully intend to steal it, this republic ends. And are you prepared to fight? Are you prepared to give it all? Are you prepared to leave it all on the battlefield? And again, raising this kind of this hyper rhetoric, where when the reality is, Trump and the Republicans have normalized lies. The fact that they keep saying that 2020 was stolen, not true. And the people who keep telling me, no, it was stolen, they keep regurgitating the same false lines. The same false lines that no Republican took into a court of law. And as I've been saying all along in this, I believe what people take into the court of law, where you can be held accountable for lying. Well, the only place that lying you can be held accountable for, perjury. I know my Louisiana, you know, governor folks and Republicans there want the Ten Commandments everywhere, where lying is on the list. It's not really a crime or anything, but it's on the list. It's there. Thou shall not bear false witness. And yet, every day they check this one off of their list because they keep telling us things that they know are not true. That's the part that I have a problem with. Now, on the Steve Bannon front, he's supposed to report to prison on July 1st to serve his four-month sentence and you know, do his 4 months in jail. After being convicted of contempt of Congress back in 2022, because he failed to provide documents and testimony to the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attacks on our Capitol. So, you know, there is that. Also, one of his crony types, Roger Stone, says, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Trump, he says, will deny any loss. And you go, did I need Roger Stone to tell me that? The answer, no. I didn't need that at all. But it is true. And this is where, again, I come back to this moment. What can bring us back together? What can unite this country? I've been saying for years, I want people to take off the red hat and the blue hat, put on a hard hat. We got work to do. And we do. We've got a lot of work to do. And the longer it takes to get to actually doing the work, the more the work is going to build up. The harder it's going to be to solve problems. Because, and I hate thinking this way. I hate being in this position where I think Republicans don't want to solve problems. I think they want problems so that they can continue to use them in the most divisive way possible. A way that tears us apart and shreds at the very fabric of who we are. Because I'm fortunate in that I know a lot of Trump supporters. I know a lot of people who vote for Republicans. And when you talk to them individually, they want the same stuff. It's we're fed this kind of heated rhetoric, much like the Steve Bannon thing. You know, are you ready to fight? Are you ready to go to the battlefield? Are you ready to give it all? You know what that means? That's Civil War talk. That's taking up arms against your neighbor talk. There's no other way to read that. So I don't care. Please, save the email. That's not what he was really talking about. You know, Democrats talk about fighting. Yeah, Democrats talk about fighting, but their fighting is word fighting. As I've said for a very long time, you know, a Democrat will offer to hold your coat in a street fight. That's kind of where they've been for a while. Would I like to see them ball up the digits every once in a while? Kind of would, but not so much. And a perfect example, I saw the dumbest thing that I think I've seen in a very long time. In the Vermont House of Representatives, evidently a woman named Mary Morrissey, a Republican representative, evidently was pouring water. I can't believe how childish this is. I mean, this is an elected official. This is someone that people voted for to go to the Vermont House and do the people's work. Evidently, she was caught pouring water into this guy's bag multiple times over the last several months. The person who the bag belonged to is Representative Jim Carroll, a Democrat, represents somewhat in the same area. So I guess they're fairly close to each other. Now I'm truly ashamed of my actions. Nonsense. You got caught. That's what you're ashamed of. You did what you did. And I don't know why. And this is sadly what our politics has become. This is sadly where we are. We're talking about some idiot dumping water in somebody else's bag instead of going, hey, the pipes that water came in, free of lead? No? Should we replace those? Should we have a bill, a policy? Can you move that through your house so that maybe we can get the funding so that kids don't have, you know, problems? Here's the thought. Wouldn't it be a good idea? Evidently not. Evidently, it's easier just to pour water in people's bags. And I may sound like a broken record, but I truly want to leave my kids something worth inheriting. You know, you think back to what our grandparents left us, the infrastructure that we were left. As I said before, Thomas Friedman said, you know, he went from Beijing to LAX, and it was like going from the Jetsons to the Flintstones. My view had always been as a kid growing up that we were going to be the Jetsons. We were going to have the best transportation system in the world, the best education system in the world. I believed that, hey, we're number one. We're the best. I bought into it. A lot of us did. Only to find out that, well, it's true if you can afford it. But if you're a working stiff, not so much. And this is where my mind, I grew up, you know, being patriotic and thinking, I love my country. I want the best for my country. I want the best for the future of my country. And this is where I go, what's that unifying thing that brings us together? What is it that we can agree on that you go, let's focus on this? I think infrastructure is part of that, a huge part. Building low-cost housing, a huge part of this, to ensure that people have a place to live and to be able to afford it. Healthcare. I think we need more public healthcare, more publicly funded healthcare. I don't know if you've noticed, but our healthcare system is being bought up by a handful of corporations. Yes, I know they're nonprofit, supposedly, but their CEOs seem to be making a whole bunch of money. So for me, this idea that there are things, and this is one of my true norths, the things that we cannot do individually, we do collectively through our government, healthcare, education, infrastructure, all of those things. And we find a way to do it the best we can. When did we lose that? When did we stop striving for that kind of excellence and perfection and innovation and you know, entrepreneurship and, you know, however you want to frame that? When did that happen? When did we lose that? You got a thought? I'd like to hear it. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Tell me when you think this stuff went all right. Or no, is everything just fine? Everything just peachy keen, wonderful, terrific. I want to hear it. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. As always, make sure you check out our free speech program on free speech at freespeech.org. Seriously, how do we get to the getting rid of the red hat and the blue hat and getting that hard hat and getting to work? How do we get there? I want to hear your thoughts. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.